Hello there and welcome to another edition of The Best of Mornings with Matt White right here on SEN. On Monday, the Courier-Mail's Peter Bedell joined Matty to reveal the breaking news on Kalyn Ponga and discuss the Rich 100 list.
Yeah, and don't forget this footy season, pick one NRL winner each week for your chance to win $2,500. Go to sensurvivor.com.au. Thanks to Bryden's Lawyers. Welcome back on 1170am Sydney and wherever you're listening across the SEN network via our app. Peter Bedell from the Courier-Mail has been kind enough to give us some time this morning. G'day, Pete.
G'day, Matt. How are you, mate?
Good, mate. Nice and busy on this Monday morning. Can I get to the issue that's just been raised on the Daily Telegraph website as well about Kalyn Ponga and Kurt Mann? So this video that's been published of them being kicked out of a toilet cubicle by security. Do you know any more on this one?
Well, I don't know too much more at this stage, Matt. It's obviously just broken this morning, but obviously the NRL Integrity Unit have been informed of this video and they are investigating as we speak. And I'm sure in the fullness of time we'll have some sort of determination. But as it stands right now, there's been a video emerging of Kalyn Ponga and his Knights teammate Kurt Mann being kicked out of a toilet cubicle by security. Now, what happened in that cubicle, that needs to be established by the NRL Integrity Unit. They'll do that over the next 24 to 48 hours. I saw some quotes, Matt, from Kalyn's father who said he just wasn't feeling well and his teammate went into the cubicle to assist him. So I guess we'll know more about it. Let's hope it's nothing serious or damaging for the game, Matt. But as we know, when toilet cubicles and clubs are involved, invariably there's drama. So let's see what happens in the next 24 to 48 hours.
I had a listener text in, mate, that said, you know, this is going to test the Newcastle Knights leadership and management. Peter Parr's obviously there as well, and Adam O'Brien's had one heck of a year trying to deal with all sorts of stuff. It will be a big test for the Knights, won't it?
Absolutely, Matt. And as we know, with clubs who tend to be struggling, often winning papers over the cracks or losing exposes the cracks. And we've seen some incidents in recent weeks. Obviously, with the Knights, there's been a talk about Adam O'Brien's future as coach. And then, of course, we had the David Clemmer incident with trainer Hayden Knowles, which suggested some rumblings at the Knights. So, look, I'm sure they'll say they're not a club in crisis, but where they are on the ladder at the moment and some of the off-field issues they're facing, especially with their captain, Kalyn Ponga, who is one of the stars of the game, they need to sort things out quickly and get some results next season.
So you guys got everybody talking with the rich list, the top 100, and it's an interesting scenario, isn't it, where in this game the salaries are laid bare, essentially. A lot of people have been saying to me, how do you come to the conclusion of this? And it's not just sitting around and guesstimating. Whilst it is still a bit of a guesstimate, there's a lot of work that goes in behind the scenes on this. So can you just talk us through that process of how you compile a Rich 100 list?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I'm surprised you're not on there, Matt. You'd be on a fair wicket, wouldn't you, at SDN, mate? We could have got you in there on about $2.2 million. What do you reckon?
is that next weekend? I'll wait for the Sunday papers next weekend.
yeah, the top radio earners. But, no, mate, look, it is, despite what people think, we actually do put a lot of effort into this rich list. It's months of research. It's quite exhaustive. And often it's people in and around the game that we talk to, often the players themselves. Some players are happy to share their salaries, others aren't. And we double-check and triple-check some facts. I mean, often we hear a figure from someone, we'll then go to a club or someone else to try and verify that number. So, look, it's not just us throwing darts at a dartboard. We take this seriously. We treat it ethically. And we believe the numbers that we put out are very accurate. Are they perfect? Probably not, but I think we're very accurate.
Did anything surprise you on that list? I mean, we end up with 8 millionaires at the moment. We'll have more than that next season and beyond, and those numbers are only going to go up. But did anyone in particular jump out at you, or any stat that came out across the whole 100, not just the very top?
Yeah, a couple of things, Matt. For me, Luke Brooks's deal with the Tigers has really popped my eyeballs. I mean, he's on $960,000 this year. He'll go beyond the $1 million mark next year. And I think given Luke Brooks's form over the last 4 or 5 years, I think that's just a staggering deal, and it's really hampered the Tigers' salary cap. Interesting too, Matt, the breakdown of the positions. So in the top 100, only 6 players are fullbacks. Now, we often see the fullback position in the game as so critical as part of a spine, and we often hear people saying players want to play fullback because that's where the money is. But apart from James Tedesco and Tom Trbojevic, there's not a lot of fullbacks in the list that earn big dollars. So even someone like Dylan Edwards, who's a premiership-winning fullback at Penrith, he's not in the top 100. So I found that fascinating, that fullbacks don't get paid as much as we think.
So just six in the 100 are fullbacks. Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, Matt, the other interesting from a club perspective, nine Dragons players are in the top 100. Now, when you look at the performance of the Dragons over the last few years, missing the finals, I find it staggering that they've got the highest representation of top 100 salary earners. When you consider clubs like Penrith, the Roosters, South Sydney have been finals mainstays, the Dragons have more high salary earners than any club in the game, which I find amazing.
And especially off the back of that loss yesterday, that'll get their blood boiling even further, mate. Believe me, it's boiling this morning. What about some of those that are off contract by the time November 1 comes around and the discussions can start to be had? Because we're looking at very big names with very big numbers. Latrell, Victor Radley, David Fifita, Cam Munster in particular. So what does this mean for them and their respective teams? And how much more do you reckon they can start to earn in the coming years?
Yeah, it's a good point, Matt. I mean, of the 100 players, 32 will be free agents from November 1. So that's a third of the list that will be available to be bought and to field offers. So, and as you said, there's some big names in the game. And the two clubs that will be most affected, Matt, are Penrith and South Sydney, the reigning grand finalists. Now, Penrith, as we see, when success comes to a club, invariably with the nature of the salary cap, there's always a danger you can be torn apart. And there's guys like Stephen Crichton, Liam Martin, Brian To'o, that they stand to make big bucks. And then there's someone like Dylan Edwards, of course. So whether Penrith can keep all their stars together and have a dynasty, that's the big question. So, yeah, look, a lot of free agents coming up for grabs, Matt, and that's a good opportunity for the new club, the Dolphins, because they need star power and they could get it over the next 12 to 18 months.
Well, that's the other curveball, isn't it? You know, for the first time in a long time, we have a brand new team coming in. So that's going to be quite incredible to see what effect the Dolphins have on how much money is going around in the game. So I guess it leads us, Pete, then to the big question. When and who is our first $2 million man in rugby league?
Well, I thought you were, Matt, but let's put that aside. You've quashed that rumour. Oh, look, I don't think it will ever happen, Matt. I mean, not in my lifetime anyway, I don't believe. I mean, the highest earner at the moment is Nathan Cleary on $1.3 million. I can see with the cap rising over time, I could see it getting to $1.5 million, but I don't think we'll see a $2 million player for a very long time, maybe 20 or 30 years, maybe longer. So, I think salary cap rises incrementally, but with the salary cap spend and the top 30 in for each club and the money you've got to allocate to all 30 players, it makes it very difficult to have a $2 million player.
Yeah, I agree. It's a long way down the track, but you're right. I mean, 1.3 for Nathan Cleary, it doesn't seem too much of a stretch to go, oh, well, over the next 5 to 10 years, he could probably boost his value by $500,000 or $600,000, but that's a lot of money out of the cap and it's a lot of juggling to go around. It's been fascinating to read and to count it all down and then break it up, as you say, like the fullbacks, like the Dragons have nine in that list as well. It's been incredible to dig our way through it. Good work, mate. Great to talk this morning. Thanks for your time.
No worries, Matt. Any time.
After Peter Parr and the Newcastle Knights press conference on Tuesday, Matty had his say on the shitsville that the Knights are currently in.
Now, Peter Parr did speak on Bradman Best and Inari Tuala, so let's have a listen to that right now.
Two players being stood down from the next game or not selected?
Bradman Best and Inari Tuala have both been stood down from NRL duties this weekend to play New South Wales Cup for not meeting team standards. They were both late for the team bus on Sunday morning in Brisbane. They weren't late by a long period of time, but we just believe that they didn't meet the standards necessary. And so Adam and I, along with the other coaching staff, thought that the best thing to do on this occasion was to stand them down this weekend.
Okay. Late for the bus, stood down for the weekend. A game against the Raiders. Now, they're 14th on the competition ladder, as we know. Inari Tuala, Bradman Best. Fractionally late, if you're picking that up from Peter Parr, on the bus to try and get themselves out of Brizzy and get home. Not playing this weekend. Swift action taken straight away for missing the bus or being a little bit late to the bus. Yet the video emerges of the captain of the team coming out of a cubicle, and we're handing that over to the NRL Integrity Unit. Both of them are injured. Well, one's out with concussion, the other's out with a quad strain. So I don't know if Peter saw that one coming from the press conference. So somebody obviously got the word there. I think we can safely say that amongst all of this and whatever's going to come out of the NRL Integrity Union, the Knights are in shitsville. They need to get their house in order quick smart. And Peter Parr's been there now for 2 weeks and he's had all this thrown at him. David Clemmer situation. Now this. Boy, if ever there was a turning point, the Newcastle Knights are facing it right now. What on earth happens on Sunday afternoon against the Raiders? We don't know. Let's hope they put up a fight at McDonald Jones Stadium. Your thoughts? 0457 736 736 and your calls 1300 01 1170.
Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs major sponsor Craig Lawney revealed why the club signed Cameron Serrato to a 5-year deal.
Well, as we know, one of the big talking points over the last 24, 48 hours in rugby league has been the signing of Cameron Serrato at the Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs. So a 5-year deal, they got their man. Craig Laundy is on the line, major sponsor, of course, of the Doggies and a critical part of all this. Craig, appreciate your time this morning.
Good morning. Nice to be with you.
Yeah, and you too as well. Look, you obviously had Cameron Serrato earmarked here, and you guys are very successful in business. You've got a very big organisation that you run. How difficult was it to piece this deal together?
Oh, look, it did take some time, but we approached it pretty pragmatically. You know, John Currie and Aaron Warburton there at the Dogs and the board have put Gus Gould in place, obviously, on the football side of the fence. Our piece of the puzzle was more a relationship piece. So, you know, I had a mutual friend that knew Cam. I didn't know him before this process started. You know, Gus was adamant that he was the right guy. So we reached out at a personal level, and my father Arthur, my brother Stuart, and myself, and contacted Cam. And had some early talks and just gauge the calibre of the bloke, which is a piece that, you know, a lot of people obviously talking about his coaching ability, which is there, you know, clearly there, and he'll be outstanding. But what we quickly learnt was the quality of the bloke. He's just a really, really good guy, and his values and work ethic, and that was. That they were the discussions. It really started at a personal level for us as a family. You know, Gus handled the footy side and we worked hard on the relationship side.
Here's one. I'm a logistics man, Craig, so a little lighthearted one for you. When you've got as many pubs as you guys have got, how do you come up with the venue of where you're going to meet?
we normally, the Red Line is a popular one because it's sort of centre of Sydney at Roselle there, and it's easy to park around. So a lot of the time we make it there. But you're right, we do have a lot of choices. But that was the venue of choice, and we met Cam there solo at the start, without his manager. It was more a personal approach and just a sit down and a cup of coffee. And probably if you were framing a market at that point, we would have been 100-1. But we just chipped away and we worked. Gus worked extremely hard and the board had full confidence in Gus and his judgment. And we worked and just kept chatting and along the way and explaining to him that we have a long-term, you know, hope that the club is restored to where it should be. It's an amazing brand. It's got an amazing fan base. Leagues club behind it, and Cam could be the person that could do that.
How do you get it from 100-1 to a signature on the paper?
You persist. You explain, you know, Gus on the football side, us on the business side of the fence. You know, we're interested, and Dad's key mantra has been to mentor the players and to make sure that they are financially stable post their football career, given that it's a you know, a short period of time for these young blokes. And we, you know, we've got obviously a strong track record of financial success, and we're keen for the players to be, you know, good on the field. That's Gus and Cam's job, but for us, it's looking after them off the field as well, and making sure that they're financially stable. If they've got, you know, concerns with life and situations that arise, we're always there to talk to them.
You would have seen and heard, Craig, all of the talk around the five-year component of this deal and the number given to a rookie head coach. I mean, somebody who's proven and tried and tested as an assistant coach, obviously. But the five-year deal has got everybody talking from a football point of view. So that's in Gus Gould's hands. That's in the footy department side of the aspect that we're talking about. What about the business side of backing a five-year deal for a coach? From a pure business side, how did you guys reconcile that and say that was the right thing to do?
Look, it matched up with, it was quite an easy, you know, Gus, you're right, he was the one that did the details. But for us as a family, we're involved in discussions. We're at the end of our first two-year major sponsor deal with the Dogs. We have an option to exercise another 2 years. However, we pretty quickly got very comfortable with Gus's vision and Cam being a long-term appointment. So as we speak, we're in active discussions about a long-term major sponsor deal with the Dogs. So, you know, I'm confident, and, you know, everyone's talking, you're right, everyone's raising the five-year issue. I don't think Cam's going anywhere for 10 to 15 years. You know, that was our hope, and neither are we, the Laundy family, with the Dogs. So it was just the right time. We were in discussions anyway, but the coach was the first piece. We were very clear to Cam that we were dedicated to the club and keen to extend, and it just lined up. It fitted very nicely.
So judging from that, mate, we could say that those negotiations are going pretty well. You've got the man there for the long term, and therefore you guys as an organisation, as a family, are prepared to commit further than the two-year turnaround that you'd normally do?
Yeah, look, there's a big piece, Bill. There's the Dad's 81 now, and, you know, he has been involved with this club since Peter Moore days, sort of informally. The last couple of years when they were in trouble there a couple of years ago and couldn't get a major sponsor, it was a great opportunity for us to become formally involved. And the irony here is Dad's a tragic West Tigers supporter. I'm the Dog supporter. I'm the only Dog supporter in the family. You know, but we've come from that area, and Canterbury Bankstown has been very, very good to my family for four. Charlie, my young bloke, is the fourth generation now working in our business. And, you know, we owe that area a great deal. And we've been involved informally with this club for a long, long time. You know, guys like Jeff Robbo, Dad still talks to him daily. Dave Gillespie, Steve Mortimer, you know, these guys have drunk at our pubs out there for 30 or 40 years. So, but the piece that I think is, you know, and we're talking to Aaron and John at the moment, we're very interested in legacy, a legacy piece for Dad. You know, he's 81 now. He's slowing down a little bit. He would hate me saying that, but he is. And we're interested in, you know, being involved with this club for a long period of time as a legacy play for Dad too, to say that, hey, you know, yes, you know, we've been out here a long time and we love the joint. We've been involved, but, you know, let's formalise it.
I had a great chat with your dad when the whole Matt Burton situation was going on and trying to get him across to the Dogs. Now, that's eventually played out and he's been absolutely sensational. So when we look ahead towards this deal and towards more commitment from the Laundy family, where does Matt Burton sit in all of this? Because from November 1, as you well know, he can start negotiating with other clubs.
Yeah, look, Matty is a superstar. We knew he was, you know, which is why we were so keen to sign him. Dad and I went out and sat with his mum out there at Dubbo and had a chat and explained that, you know, our role in looking after players off the field, and so it's I think that's the next piece. The coaching piece of the puzzle's now done. Obviously Matt has a strong history with Cam, and you know Gus and Cam will start to talk to Matt, and I'd be very confident that they can work something out.
Just a final one, Craig. Just a quick one, and I'm not sure if it sort of falls into your realm here, but Mick Potter and the work that he's done this year since taking over from Baz and turning everything around, obviously would have known that the head coaching position was probably going to end up in the hands of somebody like Cameron Seraldo. How do you reflect on Mick's time there, and what kind of future do you see him playing in the club over the next couple of years?
Look, ultimately, that's a decision for Gus and for Cam. But, you know, how do I reflect on what he's achieved in the past 3 or 4 months? He's been, you know, a superstar, which we always knew he was. He's a long-term, but had a long-term association with the club, obviously from playing days to today. He gets it. He gets what this club is about. And, I'm sure that Gus and Cam, well, put it this way, not just Mick Potter, but, you know, one of the things that happened during the last 3 or 4 months of chatting to Cam, that Cam put me in touch with Bobcat Ryan.
Yep.
And Andrew Ryan, and he and Cam are extremely close. And Cam just said to me at one stage, here he goes, mate, you would get on really well. And I've met Bobcat a couple of times through his playing days, but don't know him. You know, don't know him as a mate, but Cam introduced us along the way, and we've had some great in-depth chats. And there's another guy. He just bleeds blue and white, and we're all desperate just to get the club back to where we think it should be, you know, in its rightful place at the top of the tree. So, Cam gets it. He's a deep thinker. He understands the DNA of this club. And I know from many, many chats with him that he's got big plans to have all of the people around, whether it's Mick Potter, whether it's Bobcat Ryan, you know, people that get the club, understand the club, and can instill in the players, you know, the virtue of the past. And I think that's a very, very important thing. And I think it will prove very successful.
Yeah, absolutely. As we've been chatting, mate, Dennis has texted in, said the saving grace of the Dogs is the Laundy family and Gus, and now Cam Seraldo as coach. What a combination. I tell you what, if I'm a Doggies fan, after talking to you this morning and hearing what your plans are as a family ongoing, the legacy for your dad, the appointment of Cameron Seraldo, what you want to do with Matty Burton, the other players in the system, past and present, it's all looking up, mate. Appreciate the chat this morning. Thanks for your time.
You're very kind. No, it's nice. It is. I genuinely think it is looking up. And don't forget John Coorey, Aaron Warburton, the board members. You know, everyone's working their guts out. And to any fans listening out there, we're working our guts out to get this, you know, get the team to where it should be.
New beginnings, Craig. Thanks for your time, mate. Enjoy the day.
Good on you. See ya.
Craig Laundy there, major sponsor of the Bulldogs. So, wow, what a takeout. And like I said, if I'm a Bulldogs fan and I'm listening to that, I'm very, very happy with what I'm hearing and I want to start running through brick walls. Cameron Seraldo needs to be a 10, 15-year coach. We're going to go with him. We're going to stick solid, right in negotiations right now with the club to continue their sponsorship. And it appears the only way is up. And it's going to continue on that trajectory, I think, for the next couple of years at least. Back after this.
We spoke with Sydney Roosters and St. George Illawarra Dragons NRLW coaches John Strange and Jamie Soward before their season begins.
As I mentioned, the Telstra Women's Premiership gets underway on Saturday, 1 o'clock at CommBank Stadium, the Eels against the Roosters. Sydney Roosters NRLW coach John Strange, always great with his time, is on the line. Morning, John.
G'day, Matt. How are you going?
Good, thanks. Excited about what's ahead. First up against the Eels out there at CommBank Stadium. And a few little changes for your team. In fact, we've got Corbin Baxter out, of course, for this year, and Isabel Kelly has been named your captain.
Yeah, that's right. It's a great achievement for Izzy. She fully deserves to be captain. She's a great leader and just a natural born leader, to be honest. So, yeah, it's exciting for her, but obviously, yeah, disappointing for us to not have Corbs lining up this year. She was great for us last season, but Lose a few new faces, and it's really exciting for can't wait for Saturday.
I think, is it seven players that you had in last season's grand final victory that won't be there this time around? And as a coach, how difficult and how different is that for you to adjust to a new season with a whole host of new faces?
Yeah, it's not been too bad. So last year I came in as the head coach for the first time. I was assistant the year before, and we actually had quite a lot of changes. We had more changes the year before from 2020 to 21. So if we look at our lineup for, which will be announced later on today, but our lineup for this week, yeah, there's less changes, and we're debuting only two players in the NRLW as opposed to eight against the Broncos last season. So yeah, there has been a few changes, but that's the women's game at the moment. And look, it's something we're going to have to get used to, because next season with four new teams, there's going to be a lot more changes and player movement. So I think for us, you know, with the short pre-season, it's been really good because our halves have stayed. So Gracie McGregor and Zahara Tamara will be lining up as our starting halves against Para this week, and they're there in the grand final. So that's made it a lot easier for the new girls, you know, like Sammy Bremner and Destiny Brill to sort of click in into the spine.
I was at the SCG on the weekend, mate, and I saw your team obviously paraded there in front of the Roosters crowd, and it came at the same time as we got the news that the new Allianz Stadium next door will be opened with an NRLW match, so a doubleheader, and your team will take on the Dragons in a grand final rematch. So first ever game played at this brand new stadium. It's a big honour.
Oh, look, it's pretty crazy to think of it, and it's really exciting for all the girls. Yeah, once the club told them the news, they were obviously, can't wait to get to round three, but obviously we've got a couple of games before that, you know. But, it's amazing, and I really appreciate the work that our club, the Sydney Roosters, and the NRL in particular have done to make that happen. We didn't think it was going to happen. We thought we were going to be sort of bummed out to Leichhardt Oval on the Sunday night, but yeah, for the girls to be given that opportunity, it just shows what the NRL, the girls mean to the NRL and how serious they are for the women's game. So, yeah, very exciting news, that's for sure.
Yeah, you're spot on. It is strong support from the NRL and just shows how the NRL views the women's game. But I reckon it's also justification for the players, people like yourself as well, all the hard work that you've been doing to get NRLW where it needs to be. So I think the players in particular and those involved in the competition need to give themselves a bit of a pat on the back on this one, because it doesn't work without the hard work.
Yeah, look, I totally agree with that, Matt. And if I look at last season gone, I thought that all the players, all six clubs and all the players involved really raised the bar. And I had a lot of people commenting to me that I know after the season that sort of weren't really interested, to be honest, in watching women's rugby league, but just couldn't wait for this next season to start based on what the girls did and, you know, the product they put out on the field last season. So it really is a testament to the players that as to what they've done and the interest they've created. And, so it's exciting. Hopefully we can just keep raising the bar right across the board for women's game and just get more spectators.
And the other cool thing is, too, that the players know that they're part of something special. They know that they're at the forefront of all this, and you start ticking boxes like opening the new Allianz Stadium as well, and these players are living the moment, so to speak, aren't they? They're going, we're not going to get 5 years down the track and want to reflect on this. That'll happen naturally. We want to feel what we're doing along the way. And you and I have spoken about this previously. It's something that you tap into with the playing group as well, isn't it? Because it's an entirely different and unique situation that you're in as opposed to the NRL men are in.
Yeah, it is. It's an interesting sort of balance that we're trying to create. Obviously, for me, a male coaching in the women's sport, I really am a firm believer in equality right across the board, and something that I drive really hard in the way I coach. I don't coach any different to the way I'd coach the men or the way I'd previously coached men, and I'm very direct and clear with instructions, and I think the girls appreciate that because they just want to be treated as rugby league players, not girls playing rugby league. And I think that attitude sort of helps the girls, and I know a lot of other coaches in the women's sport have got that attitude, and it's just great. It's just really driving the sport, and the girls are actually athletes now as well. I think if we look back 5 years ago in the women's game, it was a little bit different. The style of play and how the girls
turned up to games are probably a little bit different. They're very professional now in how they prepare for the games, and I think that has really shown in the product. And like I said earlier, I think it's the bar's going to be raised again by everyone this season and obviously going forward.
Yeah, it's awesome. I'll be out there. We'll be doing crunch time live from Combac and then calling the game thereafter. So I'll be out there when you guys take on the Eels. So what are you expecting first up against Parramatta?
Look, they're a really good side. It's going to be interesting to see who they name, in particular in the halves today, because they have got some new halves in there. They've got four new halves. The two that were there last season aren't there now. So that'll be sort of interesting. It's something I'm waiting to see. But if you look across their squad, they've got some really, you know, they've got some quality players there with Philomena, Hennessy, the Cherrington sisters, Tiana Penatani, Simona Tau for the captain. Look, they've got a really good side. So it's probably a little bit hard to predict how they're going to play with in particular the new spine, and they're probably going to have Gale Broughton at fullback. So it's we know they're quality players, but how they're going to play, I guess it's going to be something we're just going to have to see on Saturday. And it's probably a little bit similar to us as well, that they'd be looking at our squad, and like you mentioned, seven changes from our grand final team. So you know we're going to play a little bit different in how we are you're going to structure all our shapes and everything like that, because we have different players. Like Sammy Bremner's a different fullback to Corbin Baxter, and Destiny Brill's a different hooker to Olivia Higgins. So I think it's going to be interesting for both sides. And I guess, yeah, we'll both get into it and get a feel for it, and then hopefully make the right calls. And, you know, our girls can, yeah, fingers crossed, get on top at the end of the 70 minutes.
Looking forward to it. See you out there on Saturday. Best of luck for this weekend and the season, John.
Thanks, mate. Cheers, mate.
John Strange, the Roosters NRLW coach.
We need to get into this because the NRLW season begins this weekend. As we know, the Eels v the Roosters to start it off at CommBank Stadium on Saturday afternoon. Then it's the Dragons v Titans on Sunday at Wynn Stadium at midday. Back for another year as coach at St George Illawarra is Jamie Soward, who joins me. Sowie, welcome to the program.
Hey, Matt. How are you, mate?
Good, mate. One season starts to come to an end and another season really kicks off. So this rebound of energy that you're about to get from the girls must be awesome ahead of this weekend.
Yeah, it is. We've obviously, it's been, you know, a weird year for my first year in coaching. I've got two seasons in charge and then also being a part of the NRL system. So, while that's sort of tapering off after the weekend, still a little bit of work to do there, but yeah, the girls bouncing in and they're ready to go for Sunday, which is great.
How do you personally prepare? How do you juggle one into the other?
I don't get much sleep, but luckily for me, I don't really sleep much anyway, so I probably learnt a few things in season one when I was still preparing the boys. Stuff that, you know, just take my rest when I need it rather than trying to schedule a sleep at night and get to bed. So for me, yeah, if I need to rest during the day or close my eyes for half an hour, I get that done at the office, and then usually Kezzy comes in and wakes me up with some lollies and stuff like that. So I think mentally refreshing, it's always nice to be in charge of your own team, and the excitement and the passion that I have for our program at the Dragons with the girls' side is energy enough.
What was your biggest takeout, Sowie, from last year, your first season in charge of that team? What did you reflect on the most when you got to the end of the season, when, okay, we've done that, we got so close, but what did you take out of it personally?
Yeah, I did a lot of self-reflection, which is something that I probably wasn't great at throughout my playing career. We looked at top to bottom, where we can get better and what we need to do to be able to be in that position again. And yeah, a lot of it was learning on the run and making sure I was a bit more planned with how I want to use my substitutions. And I felt like my preparation going into the game was I couldn't have been any more prepared. Sometimes I was probably flying off the handle a little bit too quickly, so I need to take a step back so that my messages are a lot clearer and direct, rather than sort of helter-skelter and maybe a bit loud at times. But for us, for my first season, we made a grand final. We've changed the culture at the Dragons. I feel like it's a real destination place now for young women to want to be a part of something special. And you know, that shows by the 17 girls we got back, you know, from our grand final squad that they love being here. So I took a step back, you know, realised it was a big accomplishment, but also realised how hungry I am to, you know, really be successful over a long period of time in this space.
So you're in it for the long haul, this one?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I go to Benny Harran and Ryan Webb all the time and tell me, just sign me up for 5 years now. Let's just get it done, because I want to make sure that we're a powerhouse for the next 5 years and, you know, leave the Dragons women's program at the top of women's sport in Australia. It's not just a flyby for me or a, you know, an avenue to try and get into the men's side. I'm here to dominate the women's space and here to make the girls better. And, you know, I really care about them and I'm passionate about it. So, yeah, I'll have no qualms. If the club came to me tomorrow and said we want to do it for 3 years, I'd sign for 3 years.
As you mentioned, you've got a whole stack of players returning that were part of your system last year. We had a chat with John Strange yesterday, in charge of the Roosters, of course, and they beat you in the grand final. He's got a stack of new faces coming in this year. So it must be pleasing for you to know that you've got that continuity. As you know, mate, in any level of sport, and especially your game, momentum and continuity and familiarity count for a lot.
Yeah, it does. I think John's probably overstating it a little bit there. You've got some fair players in the free agent market. You know, you've got a couple of girls from the Titans that were really big threats last year. Plus, you've still got Isabel and also Jess. And then they picked up an ex-De La Rue in Sammy. So they've still got a lot of talent there. But, yeah, for us, I saw it two ways, Matt. I saw it as a real head start to pre-season, that we could come in, and I have 17 girls that I've worked with before, and we signed one of our development girls as well, so really 18 girls that know the culture, know the standards that I set with my staff last year, and off the back of that, you know, the new girls come in and they've adapted to it. So it is a huge advantage in what's a short season, and, you know, and for us, like I said, you know, I feel like we're a destination place now, and yeah, we don't have to go out and buy a lot of people. I'd rather develop from within, and get those girls back was a huge head start.
What was the reaction from your girls when you heard the news across the weekend that by the time you get to September the 2nd, you'll be playing against the Roosters in the first ever game at Allianz Stadium? So the NRL said, let's make this a double header, and the NRLW game will go first. How did that go down amongst the playing group in particular, and with you, mate? You had such a great history at the footy stadium, now Allianz Stadium.
Yeah, to be honest, this is going to sound cliche. I haven't talked to it about the girls. We've been heavily focused on the Titans. We've got a doubleheader ourselves this week down at Wynn Stadium, you know, before the boys. So, yeah, that's exciting for them. But for me, I instantly thought about all the moments I'd shared at the old SFS, you know, my first grand final, Bulldogs, Raiders 94, Bella drops the ball off and the Raiders score first minute, Mal's ever last game. I played in some big games there, kicked the match-winning field goal in 14, and then, you know, I was on the sideline doing commentary in 18 when the last ever game was there. So I've got my own bit of memories and history there, and, you know, it's going to be, the girls probably found out that it was going to be a sellout, so... yeah, it's going to be exciting. The stadium looks great, and you know, we'll be hopefully in a good position then to go there and have a good game.
And like you say, it all starts before that with the doubleheader at Wynn Stadium this weekend on Saturday against the Gold Coast Titans. Sowie, it's always great to catch up with you, mate. Best of luck for the season ahead.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate your time.
Jamie Sowie there, St George, Illawarra Dragons, NRLW coach.
Plus, West Tigers lock Joe Offerhangowie previewed his 150th game in the NRL.
Let's catch up right now with Joe Offerhangowie from the West Tigers, kind enough to give us some time this morning. G'day, Joe.
G'day, Matty. How are you?
Good, thanks, mate. Hey, congratulations. You're 149 not out, so 150 this weekend, this Saturday against the Sydney Roosters. A big chunk of those at the Broncos and now the rest here at the West Tigers. Do you look at those numbers? Did you know that this one was creeping up on you?
I knew it was coming because the missus surprised me with a lot of mates and family coming. So I knew it was approaching a couple of weeks ago, but just like any other game, it's just another game for me. You know, I've got to go out there and do my best for my teammates, and that's what I'll be looking to do.
Hey, mate, when did you reckon that you felt like you belonged in the NRL? Because you come on in, you play a whole stack of games, it all happens really quickly. Did it take a year or two for you to go, okay, I found my place here?
Yeah, well, they say that there's an old saying in the NRL, players talk about it, you're not a real NRL player unless you play more than 50 games. And,
yeah,
you know, that's what it took me. It took me about 50 games to kind of know my place in the NRL, know what to do as a forward. And learning off some good forwards at the Broncos really helped me out. You know, I had some great leaders ahead of me, Alex Glenn, Sam Saade, Matt Gillette and Adam Blair, to name a couple. They just were great leaders and they impacted my career and taught me a lot of things that I still carry with me today.
What do you reckon clicks, mate, off the field? So there's certain things that click on the field. Say after those first 50 matches, you now understand how the media plays its part, how your fans react, all that kind of stuff, training, the whole lot. So was there something that clicked to you away from the game?
Not really. I never really paid too much attention to anything off the field. You know, I've always worried about what I could do on the field and worried about what I can control. And my first coach that I had in the NRL was Wayne Bennett, and he was a big believer of that. And he taught all of us young forwards to not worry about the media or fans, you know, or else one day you're going to be sitting right next to him. So for me, it's just what I can control, and that's my little family right now. I've got a little, beautiful little family, and that's what I control. I can control to provide for them.
Tell me about the family, Joe.
No, they're good. We're second year in Sydney. We're just settling in now. Finally know where I'm going without the maps. But it's all happened pretty quick the last 2 years, and I'm just enjoying my time here at the Tigers. You know, they're a real family-orientated place. Even though things aren't going well on the field, they know how to get stuff sorted off the field, so I'm happy with that.
Yeah, on the field then, let's talk about those results throughout the year. And look, we all know how it's been panning out for the West Tigers, and it has been a tough ride. So you kind of look for the positives along the way. When you reflect back on the season, all the way back to those first, what was it, 5 losses in a row, which part do you look at to go, okay, there's something in there that we need to take out. We know all the bad stuff, the good stuff that let's take out and start to focus on going forward.
Yeah, well, for me, it's, you know, we've only had 4 games where it's actually blown out. And majority of our games have lost to, like, close, like, a couple of points. You know, and the positives out of that is that we can stay in the fight. It's just about executing it. And we've got a lot of work to do still as a club. But with the new centre of excellence, that's what it brings. You know, it brings the good vibes around the club. It doesn't guarantee us wins, but it will guarantee us that we will prepare every game. We'll prepare well with the centre of excellence there.
Mate, have you seen anything like it in your travels?
No, I haven't. I haven't seen a $70 million joint anywhere. You know, it's exactly what the club needs. You know, it's going to bring those good vibes for the boys. I know all the staff members and the admins are loving it. So, you know, this first week has been pretty exciting. I got the family in there the first day it opened and saw Sheendy and Justin Pascoe all walking through there showing us sponsors and that, what it looked like. But it's a beautiful place, and hopefully we can use it to some good and get some wins on the board.
I've only seen the photos, Joffre. I've only seen the photos and, you know, various videos, et cetera, et cetera. So I haven't had my head in there. Obviously, you've seen it backside, inside and out. What's the best part for you of that new centre of excellence?
Oh, the sauna. Easy. Sauna, spa, and hot and cold. The hot and cold pools, I love it. You know, I was lucky enough to be still part of the Broncos team when they just got their joint done up. And it kind of reminds me a lot more, but this one's just a lot better and state-of-the-art stuff. So it's going to prepare us well for games. And I'm really excited for the boys to experience it next year that are coming over. I think Uppy and Papali are going to really love it. So I can't wait to, you know, get amongst them with it.
Yeah, something to show off and something to relax, especially at the end of a pretty brutal season. Whilst the Tigers have not performed the way that you guys would want to perform this season, your individual performances have been fantastic, averaging over 130 metres a game, more than 35 tackles per game. So your form, if you take a look at that just in an individual self, what do you think, you know, what would you give yourself out of 10 for the year, and what do you think you need to work on for next season?
Well, I don't really rate, you know, my missus and my dad do all the ratings for me, and they're the only really 2 people I listen to. But, you know, it's never about me, it's about the team. All I know, I can get better. There's still a lot of stuff I can improve in my game, and that's only going to help the team. And that's where I got to start looking at first. You know, I got to look in the mirror rather than look at my own performances. So,
Yeah, it's, which is a good way to do it. And like you say, you get the truth serum from those closest to you, don't you? Can I take you a further couple of years ahead now? So Noddy's been there, obviously, as the caretaker coach, and we now know that the progression's going to be Tim Sheens into Benji Marshall. How much thought do you put into that as a playing group? And what kind of excitement does that give you, knowing that that now is on the tape? That's the way that the club wants to go.
Well, it just kind of stables the team in some way. You know, we know who our coach is going to be next year. We know, and a lot of the boys here have played with Benji and Robbie, and they've always been in and around the club. But I'm more excited to work with Sheendy, you know, pick his brain. He's been such a great coach for so long. And I haven't had a coach like him with that kind of rap sheet since Wayne Bennett. So I'm really excited to work with him. I know he's a tough guy, so I think that's what this team needs, is some tough loving.
Well, I'm sure he'd like to hear it known as a rap sheet too. That'd get him all fired up. So November 1 this year, you get the chance. You can go to market. Have you had any thoughts around what you want to do there?
Yeah, I wouldn't. I'd be lying to you if I haven't thought about it. You know, for me, it's just finding the best deal I can for my family. You know, I'm not that 20-year-old that would just sign any deal anymore. I got a growing family. Two beautiful kids, a fiance, and one on the way. So, it's more thinking about what I can provide for my family, and I hope that's still here at the Tigers, and I love this club, and the club know that. So, hopefully, we can get something done before November 1. But yeah, I'll just let the footy do the talking, bro. That's all I can really do, you know.
All right, final one for you, mate. Saturday at the SCG, it's an iconic ground. I was there last weekend. You know, it's such a special occasion, any ground at the Sydney Cricket Ground, but it'll be the last one up against the Roosters. Have you played there before?
Yes, I have, and I can honestly say I don't think I've won a game there. You know, the Roosters always get up for games they're playing at the SCG, so I'm really excited. You know, the 150th against a team that I signed my first contract as a 14-year-old kid, and I came through the Sydney Roosters development team, and yeah, it's just crazy how it's done a whole 360. I get to play my 150 against him and a couple of mates that are still playing this. So.
Yeah, well, go out and enjoy the occasion. Appreciate your time this morning, mate. It's been fascinating to talk to you. Thanks for your time and best of luck for the rest of the season and whatever happens from November 1.
Cheers. Thank you, mate. Appreciate it.
Good on you, mate. Joe Offahengawi there, 150th NRL match. What a story. So up against the Sydney Roosters this weekend, the team that he came through as a junior after signing that very first ever contract. And it's great to hear players who know that they can reflect on that number, on that milestone. It's a heck of a lot of matches in first grade rugby league in this competition. I mean, it's incredible. And he did point out that 50 mark, which I'll chat to Murray Taulagi about as well. But six seasons at the Broncos. Now here he is at the West Tigers. The centre of excellence is shiny and new. The sauna, by all reports and spa, is top notch. And off they go. Let's see what happens from November 1. Appreciate his time.
Thanks for listening to another edition of The Best of Mornings with Matt White. We'll be back Monday morning from 9 a.m.